I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues. I'm joined with Robin.
Good evening.
And I've got Abby.
Yes, Abby, currently resting on me.
He's now probably going to be a silent host on this one. And myself, Matt, we are Red, White and Buffalo Blues. We are Bills News with a UK twist. And off-season, starting to get a bit closer now. Realisation with draft and free agency just around the corner. Combine going on as we probably speak right now. And how have you been since the last episode where we've actually talked about the London event?
Yeah, so London events are another week closer. We could do with knowing the dates when they come out, so we can guarantee that I have in fact booked my foreign holiday, so I'm not going to be able to go. So I like to leave myself in suspense. So thanks for the NFL for holding on to that. Happy birthday, mate, for the other day.
Thank you very much.
Don't look a day over 50.
Fuck off. Yeah, that's what 51 does for you, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it'll do that. It's coming up for me as well. Don't let my baby face fool you. I'm actually older than I look. It's a double downhill after 45, I'm telling you.
If I shave my beard off completely, I look like I'm in my 20s.
Yes, yeah, you do look like you'd have that sort of cherubic sort of feature. So you should be around, like lying on a cloud firing a bow and arrow. Yeah, you got that kind of... Got that thing, yeah.
I'm a babyface assassin.
Yeah, no. I've promised myself I'm going to grow a beard when I turn 50 as well. I'll see what the wife thinks. But yeah, I think I'm probably going to be one of those old men who do that. I think get to a certain point in life and there's nothing else to look forward to, so I might as well grow a beard.
No, exactly. But I mean,
tracking it back to the Bills.
Back to the Bills.
Last week. Yeah, you asked me how I was feeling. I think, you know, the mindless optimism is starting to kick in. I think I did have a very bad February where it took an awful long time. It's still taking an awful long time to get over the defeat. But I'm kind of consoling myself by saying worst case scenario, and I think I said this last time, but it bears repeating, worst case scenario, we're the third best team in the AFC. We beat one of the two teams. We beat the team that won the Super Bowl in the regular season. There are things we need to fix. And we'll come on to the major news story that I think we should probably deal with first, a change of the coaching situation. Sorry for the spoiler. But I think Sean McDermott realises that things need to change. And I think things are going to change. And I think the gap from where we need to be to where we are is not as far. I'm not a defeatist person. I don't think that, oh, that's it, we'll never be good enough. I don't think that's the case. I think there's things we need to improve, but I think we can give ourselves every chance of making those improvements.
That's the trouble. I mean, obviously, Frazier's stepping down for the year. Come back coaching, who knows where, next year. But that's the debate that people are having on socials. Did he make that decision before he was eventually pushed, or was it just a natural decision from him to say, look, I want to give myself a break and let's regroup? Yeah. Because you kind of think if he went before he was pushed, why did they not do that at the beginning of the off season when all the other coaching hires were taking place?
Yeah.
It's fair. Why wait till the combine about a month after the last hire to get rid of him?
To make the announcement. Well, there's a couple of possible answers to that. One is that only the fact that a number of coaching hires have already been made would only be relevant if the Bills were planning on bringing someone in from outside to be the DC. If their plan was to either Sean McDermott, which is still an open question. Whether he's going to take over the DC duties, it seems too much for him to handle. I don't mean Sean McDermott can't, but I think he should be the head coach and not do it. Although it seems to be a sense that perhaps he's going to take over the play calling. But if they were going to promote from within, then it's probably a non-factor. The lead theory that we can probably speak about first is that did he jump or was he pushed? And out of respect for what, let's be fair, was a very good 6 years as DC, where we were never really outside of the top 10 as a defense, and in many, many different areas were top five and even top three, certainly in the regular season.
Yeah.
Is something that I remember the bad old days we would have given anything to have. And out of respect for that, you don't fire a guy that does that, but you need to find perhaps a way of moving on. And the line from both Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott at the Combine was, Leslie came to us about a week ago. Mm. Now, for that to be factually true, and we have no reason to... Or we don't want to suggest that they are being untruthful. Let's just say that that is what happened. Perhaps the conversation was, we need to make some serious changes. Do you want to be a part of that? Or we're going to make these changes, whether you like it or not. And Leslie Frazier, and I only just found out the man is 64.
Yeah.
Looks very good. Speaking about age, looks pretty good on it. And maybe he was thinking to himself, oh, geez, do I want to be a part of this? You know, do you want to be a part of retooling and redoing a defense? Was he too perhaps set in his ways? Had he reached, and we suggested it a couple of times, had he taken the evolution of that defense as far as he could go? And maybe the feeling was, and McDermott said about wanting to be nastier and wanting to get a bit of edge to them, literally and figuratively, getting more out of the pass rush, being nastier on the defensive line, getting a bit more physical in the press coverage. Was that a change of philosophy or a change of direction, however minor, that Leslie Frazier either didn't or wouldn't want to be a part of? And rather than move on, and he didn't deserve to be fired, they come up with a solution that says, I'm having a year off, and why not? The man's earned it. He's earned a year off. Everyone, no loss of face, is there?
No. I think the interesting thing is obviously what actually happened. I mean, if as much as I like to see it, I don't want to see McDermott handle the play calls. I don't want him to be a Bill Belichick. I don't want him to be, in lesser extent, Andy Reid. Okay, he's an example of, you do the play calling and you're going to, and he actually do well. But I think McDermott, the more he's actually had trust in people, actually having them call it, maybe on the occasion, if he doesn't like what he sees or thinks someone's better, then chirp in with your suggestion. But I wouldn't like him to take over the play calling.
Sure, on the scene is like the CEO of the team, don't you? He's got managers underneath him who he should trust to make the right decisions. And if he thinks that they've made a wrong decision, he's got a veto and he can step in and override them. But ultimately, it's their call to make, and he manages by exception. That's normally how most businesses and most organizations function. It seems like a backward step. You could sort of understand that if the first year of the McDermott era, he maybe did the play calling because he's initializing and establishing a new defense, and then he hands it over. And maybe that's what, maybe, I mean, we're making the assumption that he is coming back to do the play calling. Maybe he's doing it to almost reset what he wants from the defense, see who comes up, and then hand it back later.
I think, I get it. It's his scheme, his defense that he brought over from Carolina. So you're going to have, whoever takes the job, you're going to have the input from McDermott and how he actually plays in there, but you want someone to come in with a bit more of a fresher idea, someone that could fit into McDermott's new mold, where he says he wants to be a bit more aggressive in the in the defense, something that the last couple of years we didn't see with Leslie Frazier. And
awfully passive, wasn't it? Awfully soft, wasn't it, at times?
Yeah.
Give him the 5 or 6 yards, stand back, you know.
But you're looking at those and just thinking, yeah, get someone from outside who can actually knows how McDermott wants to play, and then go from there. because, I mean, obviously, you're looking at internally, Bobby Babich, Eric Washington, John Butler, Al Holcomb, all that have been with McDermott either for his whole time at Buffalo or from Carolina and then to Buffalo. And they know how he's going to play, how he's actually going to, how he wants this team. But let's look outside it. There's other coaches that really can, that can step in. I mean, look outside. Even look, I know they're going to want someone that knows the system and one that's got experience in the NFL. But there is two I want to see. One I don't think has any connection with McDermott. Another one is from the college ranks. And then just looking at positional coaches, because you know you're not going to be able to hire another DC away from their job to come here. So you're looking at the rack below, so to speak. Mm. I mean, I wrote it down somewhere.
while you're looking, it's a valid point, isn't it? I mean, it rests on an assumption that everyone preaches continuity, don't they? Continuity of the business, which is great when it works, and then very quickly becomes stale when it doesn't. And I think the point you're making is, do you need someone to come from outside, or does McDermott think that you can still get a certain variety and freshness by promoting from within? Yeah. And their philosophy has always really seems to have been promoting from within. They haven't really had that many people come in. Have guys come in at a positional lower level. But
I mean, the guys I've been thinking of was the D-line coach for the Patriots, Pepper Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what? Okay, yes, it's Belichick's scheme. Belichick probably calling majority of it. But what Pepper Johnson's actually developed with that defensive line of the Patriots deserves a bit of recognition. You can also say the same for Chris Kowarek of the D-line coach at 49ers. Obviously, he's got Armstead, he's got Solomon Thomas, he's got Joey Bosa in there. But again, their D-line was pretty much up there with the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if you go secondary, we know McDermott likes to be strong in his secondary. You've got the defensive back coach from the Eagles, Denard Wilson. Spent time with the Jets, and he actually developed Jamal Adams, Marcus May, turned into a decent safety. The Eagles secondary this year was good.
Mm-hmm.
So there are outside ones, and one wild card is a former Bill safety, Jim Leonard.
Yes.
Because he's been pulling up stones, trees in college football as a defensive coordinator of Wisconsin.
Mm.
Hell, if you're only going to use him for a year, if you're thinking of bringing Frazier back for 2024, obviously
Frazier's not too bad to Buffalo in 2024, is he?
No, but if they were going to think about bringing back in, then go with an internal hire for a year.
Yeah.
If they want to think long term, get younger, get more experience, and maybe look outside McDermott's coaching tree. As much as we all talk about every head coach has their own coaching tree who's become successful, Sean McVay.
That's a pretty short coaching tree, isn't it?
Carl Shanahan.
Yeah, Andy Reid, all those guys.
Yeah, they've got good ones where they either developed or worked alongside them. And I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Wilson of the Eagles, or even to say, give Jim Leonard a go, because if you got a college defense that's actually strong,
hmm.
will it translate to the NFL? Maybe, maybe not. But it's there as the option, and it's going to be an interesting to see who he brings in, and if that gives any clues as to what really happens with Frazier or come the end of the end of this year.
Yeah, I mean, we might find out, mightn't we, at soon. It might take a while. I mean, Leslie Frazier himself might want to give an interview later on if when he decides to come back, and he may shed some light on that. McDermott Bean and Pegula as well aren't really ones to make, outside of Rex Ryan, aren't really ones to make kind of panic hires. So you got to think they'll take their time. And they'll, what's that word about processes and trusting? They'll sift through the possible candidates, and I think they'll come to a decision about who they want.
My gut feeling is that it's going to be an internal hire.
Yeah, I think all. If I was a gambling man, I would be saying the same thing.
You look at Dable when he went. It went internal. If Dorsey went, they kind of think it's going to be internal.
Yeah.
As much as I love to see that, they've got to be. I don't want them to be a complete yes man. If they're a complete yes man and just go anything that McDermott says goes, yes sir, we'll do that. Yes sir, we'll do that. Three bags full,
Sean. Yeah.
We'll do that. That's what I don't want to see. I want to see if they give. Internally, that they give free rein, they get to not amend, but they get to devise and come up with a few different plans, just try and adapt McDermott's playbook. But I don't want to see a guy come in and be, yes, sir, no, sir, we'll do this. I know I was wrong, you're right, we'll do it this way, we'll do it your way. I just don't want to see that in the next coordinator. That's my only wish, that they get a coordinator, just give him complete free reign. McDermott will not touch that defense unless he has a veto.
Yeah.
And just focus on the head coach role.
Yeah, no, I would certainly agree with you there. I think McDermott has enough to do with the head coach to be involved with the play calling. And yes, I'm with you. My flip side of that coin, of that argument, would be to say I'd be quite happy to have a DC who said yes Sean, no Sean, three bags full Sean, if it meant getting the nastier, more effective defense, certainly at the top level that we're all hoping for. I think it's just I'm just more about the results. If whatever we need to do to get this defense to get more out, let's see how those year three, there's that year three story has been going around, a few bit of the socials and a bit of the articles. Dawson Knox had a great year three. Josh Allen had a great year three. Let's hope Epenezer and Basham, Basham and Russo have good year threes. Epenezer's had his year three. It's Spencer Brown as well.
Yeah.
So let's hope that a few players kick on and we get a better, more effective team.
Yeah, one other name that I put out there, I was just reading an article, is the ex-Seahawks and Saints DC, Chris Richard.
Okay.
He's a free agent, but his defenses have never ranked worse than eighth against the pass. He's actually in Seattle, his team's ranked inside the top five in both total defense and scoring defenses of two of the seasons, and he was there from 2015 to 2017. Saints were fifth in total defense and ninth in scoring defense last season. So there are candidates out there. It's just make sure they go with the right option to get us to get us that spot.
Yeah, it's a hell of a job. I'd honestly love to know how hiring interviews go, about what they look for, what they point to, what results they can say, and what delivery and what philosophy, and how their philosophy chimes with the current philosophy, and how they can change it, and how they can get from A to B. I mean, it must be a hell of a job. I wonder what they do. I'd love to know how you evaluate coach hires and that kind of thing, because it's a brutal business. If you don't get the results,
yeah,
you're gone. So to misstep in coaching hires, especially one as important as a DC or an OC, is yeah, it's huge, isn't it? So I guess that's why they pay him the big money.
Exactly. But let's, we'll move on. Let's,
yes.
We'll talk draft free agency, the offseason, all that. The one thing, I think the one big question is what magic will Brandon Bean do to get us under the cap? Because we're, what, 19 million over the cap at the moment?
Yes.
And we've got, what, about 20-odd players that are out of contract. You've got, obviously, Poyer Edmonds has free agents. You've got Ed Oliver coming up to the last year of his deal. Matt Milano coming up to the last year of his deal. And I think who else is coming up to last year? There's a couple others that come up to the last year of their rookie deal or their last deal. And you've got to find ways to really cut that down to make us compliant, because I think we have to be under the salary cap by the first day of the NFL season, which is like only in about 13 days or so. So I think it's March 15.
Yeah, something like that, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, Brandon Bean said a year ago they weren't going to make a splash in free agency, and then they went out and got Von Miller, and we all had to scramble to record that emergency podcast at midnight or whenever it was when it came out. I think he really means it this year. I don't see them going out and making the splash because they're really up against it. According to SportsRack, the over the cap people, if you restructure Josh Allen, Von Miller, and possibly Stephon Diggs, you can pretty much get under by about 35 million, something like that. So you can probably clear most of that, which I think is probably a slam dunk. You've got to think that they'll be doing that in the next couple of weeks. Nobody loses a penny. No one loses a dollar from doing that. I think Terry Pegula has to write a big check, but everyone still gets paid what they said they were going to get paid. So
yeah,
kind of raises the question. And I remember asking this on Bill's Twitter a while ago. Well, why don't they just do that from the start? Kind of thing. And a very knowledgeable Bill's person, Bill's Twitter person, wrote back and he was like, well, your problem is you then can't get rid of them. So you're then absolutely stuck with them for the entirety of the contract, and you can't do it. There's a big argument out there, isn't there, that when people talk about salary caps being a myth, why don't they just make all contracts fully guaranteed? None of this signing bonus, training camp bonus, turning up on time bonus, punctuality bonus, clearing out your locker bonus, Christmas bonus, and all that bullets. Just say you're going to get paid this much money this year and this much money the next year. Just because otherwise, because you have what you have now, which is people, you know, cheating, and it's great, and it goes when it's your team that does it, you won't complain, do you? But it seems a way of monkey wrenching what was put in place to stop this sort of thing from happening. But all the napkins and the fag packets all get written on, don't they? And people sort of figure out ways of making it work. To return to your next point, should we do the free agency question first about what we're doing with free agents, I suppose, to be more exact? What do we do with Edmonds? What do we do with Ed Oliver?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at it because of obviously the cap implications, all that, what we just talked about, Diggs thing. The one good article, podcast section you want to listen to is going back a couple of days, is Joe Marino's take on it, and also Greg Thompson from Cover One. Both really break it down, especially Greg. He is a whiz at this cap stuff. I mean, he put a caption out on how to make what was it about? It's starting cap. He's actually got it down to 16.5 million over, and then getting to 50 million over under the cap space by doing Josh Allen, obviously a base salary restructure.
Yeah,
obviously gets us 21 million. Von Miller Again, a roster bonus conversion, 10 million, 11 million, if you want to round up. Dawkins and Trey White, base salary reduction. That's what? That's 11. That's pretty much 12 million on there. Hines, McKenzie release. Daquan Jones sign a 2-year extension to actually spread out the cap hit and have a pay cut for Tim Settle. But the interesting one on there, he had Ed Oliver trade for a second and fifth round pick, saving 11 million.
Mm. Now, see, that did catch my eye as well. Very quickly on releasing Hines, I like Isaiah McKenzie. I won't disagree with releasing him. I think he had his prove it year and he didn't prove it. Like him, but not, he's not 17 games a year good. But Nyheim Hines, if they're serious about releasing him just for the money, you're then probably going to have to draft a running back, aren't you?
Yeah. I think
to do that, which is worth comment. And then, which then brings us to Ed Oliver. Now, I would put Ed Oliver in the same category as Jordan Poyer and Tremaine Edmonds in that. And maybe I would slightly set aside Jordan Poyer from that, but certainly players that are very good, perhaps not quite as good as their draft profile and where they were drafted should maybe be. They're probably not quite hitting it. And more crucially, were they to go to free agency, they could get a bigger check from a hungrier team than the Bills could match.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the conversation about Tremaine Edmonds. I think we all like Tremaine Edmonds. We'd be happy for him to come back. We'd like a team-friendly deal, but the fact of the matter is no one would blame the man at 25 with 5 years' experience in the NFL of getting an 18 to 20 million a year deal when we can 12 to 15.
12 yeah.
to 15, yeah. And Ed Oliver, which then brings us to Ed Oliver, which is you could actually get something for him if you traded him now.
Yeah.
And second and a fifth could help us rebuild that offensive line.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to do it. I mean, it does pose the question: Are you Team Edmonds? Are you Team Poyer, or are you a Team Brandon Bean? Just reduce everyone that's got a high cap hit. Reduce them to pretty much the base minimum, and actually re-sign them both. But it's going to be an interesting free agency, really, for the Bills and draft. And you've got to find that fine line between finding free agency and the priority and prioritizing the draft over.
Yeah.
I mean, Bean's come out.
Can I give you the argument against doing that?
Which one? What?
The one you just said about you could restructure deals, free up money, and you could figure out a way of proratering and, you know, you could figure out a way of bringing back Jordan Poyer and Tremaine Edmonds back and still restructuring Josh Allen and Von Miller and getting it under the cap.
Mm.
Let me give you an argument against why you shouldn't do that.
Go for it.
Having Tremaine Edmonds, Jordan Poyer, Josh Allen, Von Miller and Stephon Diggs on the team, if you restructure the deals, as I was just saying a minute ago, you're basically committing to that player. You cannot get rid of that player. It's a one-time exercise where you free up the money. If you free up the money, you're hanging on to Josh Allen, Von Miller, and Stephon Diggs, come what may. If you use that money to re-sign Tremaine Edmonds and Jordan Poyer, you are essentially running it back. You are going back into the 2023 season with more or less the same players that are in the 2021 season and the 2022 season. And for as good as that team were, they weren't good enough.
Mm.
You are basically going back to the same players that you had before and hoping for a slightly better result. And maybe they're a bit less injured this coming year, and maybe they're a bit more effective, and maybe they're a bit a year older and a year wiser, and maybe Gabe Davis has that proper breakthrough, and maybe the pass rush gets a bit better with Russo and Basham. But basically, you're trying the same thing again. And my argument, really, Jordan Poyer, I just don't think it's worth bringing back because he deserves more money than the Bills could realistically afford.
Anyone.
And at that age, you're already getting Micah Hyde back at 33, who's already been injured, and Jordan Poyer's already been injured. And there's a very good chance that neither of them play beyond the 2023 season, and then you're kind of screwed. Because then you've got, you're then starting out, almost starting over at the safety position again. You let one of them go this year, and then you train another safety, and then you let the other one go maybe the year after that. And I would say the same thing about Tremaine Edmonds, which is we'd all like to have him back on that 12 to 14. He deserves more money and could get more money. But ultimately, with that defense and with that player, we have still not been good enough.
Mm.
And if we let him walk and we get something for Ed Oliver, yes, it's a gamble, but we are also refreshing the defense. And we are also making a statement within the locker room and to the rest of the team that we will not settle for just about good enough. Yeah. We are building a championship winning team, and we've not been good enough as a championship winning team. And if that means we have to let a couple of cool, very good, excellent guys go because we need to get a bit better, then so be it.
Yeah, I mean, this brings us to obviously. What we're going through now is a similar sort of situation to what's going on, what happened when McDermott first got here. And even he came out and said this. He said, obviously, every year's a new challenge. When he got here in 2017, a ton of free agents, very little cap room, didn't have many draft picks, but they found their way through. And I think that year they made the playoffs that first year.
Yeah, beat the Dolphins in the last game, and obviously we had the Tyler Boyd Andy Dalton.
And they could do that, so they have that experience to do that. And
they traded players away to four picks. Yeah, Cody Glenn.
They had, and Brent Bean comes out and says he views free agency as time to replace the needs on the roster, which sets them up for the wants in the draft, and they've got to find low-cost free agents that can find roles, whether it's a key backup or solid starter, and then obviously put more emphasis on his scouting staff to actually find that that diamond in the rough that you get in the second round. I mean,
yes,
the last time the Bills picked 27th, who was that selection?
Oh, that's a good quiz. Well, that would mean us going out in more or less the divisional round. Now, we went out in the divisional round last year, but we picked at about 25. Kyrie Elam was 25, 26.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it Kyrie Elam?
No, it wasn't Kyrie Elam.
No, we didn't. We didn't pick Kyrie Elam at 27. We picked him at about 24, 25, didn't we? So it wouldn't have been the championship game of 2020 because we picked further up. But then it would be, must be like late 90s or something.
Nope.
Go on, give up. What is it?
Tre'Davious White.
We picked Tre'Davious White at 27.
Picked Tre'Davious White at 27. Brandon Bean. Oh. Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott's first, well, Sean McDermott's
yes,
first Sean ever McDermott's draft pick when he got here. Tre'Davious White, the number 27th pick.
So how did we get there? Did we trade back? Because we didn't qualify in that was part
of the trade with the Chiefs.
Oh, we trade Cordy Glenn to the Chiefs?
No. Yeah. That, I don't know what the actual trade involved, but we swapped. So they got our 10th pick. And picked Patrick Mahomes.
That's right, yes.
And we dropped down.
Oh, God. There'll be people listening to this screaming at us. Yes, of course, we went all the way down. That's so right. We traded down.
That is that. And then it brings me on to how it works. I mean, I've read a good article about the Chiefs, but their blueprint and how they've gone from that point of actually picking Mahomes to where they are now. And in a way, their way of doing it is planning 2 years in advance.
Yeah.
So they're planning not for this year, they're for next year. Because in their loss to Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl, obviously Mahomes did for about 500 yards and sacks and actually got hit quite a lot. So obviously they prioritized the offensive line. We did complete the opposite. We found the blueprint to beat the Chiefs was actually rush. So we actually invested in that. They did it the other way, which has now given Mahomes a lot of time. I don't think Mahomes got touched or sacked at all.
Didn't have a single sack in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that was because of that their work into the offensive line. I mean, obviously, they got rid of Hill, so they didn't have to pay him a load of money.
Yeah.
They've actually, and they worked hard in drafting, obviously, got Orlando Brown Jr., Joe Tooney, and then drafted Creed Mahomes? Creed Humphrey.
Yes.
They actually started building into that offensive line and then built outwards, like we're doing, built outwards to build inwards. I mean, and then even then, when they got rid of Hill, obviously they had Kelce. They didn't make a huge splash at wide receiver. Just Smith-Schuster, you could call him that, but Valdes-Scantling wasn't a big name guy.
No. But
they had good production because Mahomes was protected by that offensive line.
Yeah.
And it also comes down to the amount of rookies they've used. They use their rookies pretty much all through the season. I mean, Trent McDuffie in the title game had a play that could have been completed made the play that could have been completed by Burrow. Calathis had a sack. Sky Moore with the return game. Brian Cook played in the total game. He actually he tipped a Burrow ball to Higgins. Josh Williams was there for the interception on the tip from Cook. Isaiah Pacheco, who overtaken the number one pick the previous year of Clyde Edwards-Helaire as the running back. Jalen Watson, an interception in each of the playoff games. He was their seventh round pick. They've worked and put their fingerprints over and over 2 years in advance to get to that spot.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's fair to say a lot of their picks have landed, have caught fire, haven't they?
And then
in the way that ours haven't.
And then, you look at ours. I mean, what was it? We had Rashard Wildgoose, Alec Anderson, Cody Glenn, if we're going back and all that.
Well, they didn't try at the offensive line, did they? They did bring a couple of people in, but it just didn't work out.
We talk about every year there's a blueprint to get better. Let's follow that blueprint. Recently, it's been go on the pass rush. Beef up that pass rush. Give them time. That's all well and good. You can throw money at Von Miller, Milano to re-sign him. Throw it at Daquan Jones, Tim Settle, Jordan Phillips, Shaq Lawson and all that. But it's the O-line that needs work because if you can't, you can rush all you want and get off the field. But if your offense can't sustain a drive on that offensive line, that gas defense will come straight back on and actually be lagging a bit and then causing us to lose a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, you could always argue it from the other end as well, that if you focus on the offensive line, but if you don't fix the pass rush and that kind of thing, you'll be a 34-31 team. You'll be like, you know, the Packers or something that you can always put points up, but then you always let them in at the other end, don't they? I think it's fair to say they've probably ignored or have not devoted enough to the offensive line, certainly not in the draft. I mean, which I think they're going to need I don't think anyone minds if they double dip the draft this year. I don't think it was a bad decision to focus on improving the pass rush. I like that. And that was a 3-year plan. You're just hoping that, like I say, the year three pass rushes kick in this year. And then it's a whole different story.
You look at the O-line. I mean, the PFF final grades. Do you know the highest ranked Bill was?
In what? In
the whole O-line, in final PFF final O-line grades overall. Yeah. So not pass and run, combined of both.
Like a player rating?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. For the year 2022?
Yeah, for the season just gone.
So of anyone on the offensive line, I'm probably going to say Mitch Morse.
No.
Really?
Deion Dawkins.
Really? Because I wasn't sure he had that as good a season this year that he certainly hasn't had in the past.
43rd in PFL's final O-line grade with 73.8. If you exclude Ike Botko, who's only played one game that year, where's the next Bills offensive lineman?
So Deion Dawkins is 43rd of all offensive linemen?
Yes.
Does it say where he is in comparison to other left tackles?
I would have to go back and have a look at that one.
Oh, okay, no worries.
But overall, out of all the linemen, who was the next highest Bill?
Is it Mitch Morse now?
It's Mitch Morse now.
Yeah, but
166th.
Ouch. Supposing everyone had played the same offensive line, you've only got 160. You've got 32 teams with 5 offensive linemen.
Yeah, 166th out of all qualifying O-line men with a rating of 61.0.
Which is really surely implies that backup linemen are more rated higher than Mitch Morse's.
Yeah, for other teams, yeah. For the Bills, Morse was the second
best Bill, but other backup linemen of various description of other teams will have been better than Mitch Morse. Yeah, that is bad.
Whether that's screening or not is a different thing, but it's where we've got to look now. And I've seen mock drafts where we're drafting running back Beyond Robinson at 27, where they're looking at
Mel Kiper went for Bijan Robinson. I've seen a couple of others going for him as well.
Where you've got a wide receiver at 1. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I would love to see a round 1 wide receiver come in and do it. But you've got a guy like Osiris Torrance, who is actually an absolute unit in the interior, and you've got guys that can at least come in the second round, like Schmidt, Steve Avila. There's one more, which is more of a center only prospect who possibly could do guard, which is I can never pronounce his name, the center out of Michigan. I'm not even gonna bother to pronounce his name, but you've got guys like that. I would double up on offensive linemen, especially interior, because you've got Spencer Brown that struggled big time. You've got Ryan Bates, who is more of a left guard than a right guard. His best seasons come at left guard, not right guard.
Yeah.
Flip him over and having Dawkins, Bates and Morse, that left side is solid, and it's just the right tackle and right guard. And
here's a question for you, though.
Yeah.
We talked there about O-line. I mean, you can draft a running back, but if you don't have a decent O-line, the running back's only as good as the O-line in front of him. Mm-hmm. But are we saying we need to draft, let's say, a center or a guard in the first round because we really need improvements of the O-line? But let me see if I can phrase this correctly. What is the difference between drafting a center or a guard in the first round and the potential drop off between drafting one in the second or third? So I'm with you, and I think most people are. Yes, let's improve the offensive line through the draft. great, let's get a center or a guard. But is there a guy we could get in the second or third who would be more or less as good as the guy to get in the first round? And do you save the first round pick for the person who really makes the difference, who gives you that real blue chip, top of the line, high ceiling?
There are guys that you can get in the second round that will come in and make a difference. I mean, if you're looking at just pure centers, then you're looking at Schmidt of Minnesota. I'm trying to get the list up because there are. I've had a list made. Where is that list? You can get other prospects then and there. And where is it? Flippin' heck. Ah! I should have actually prepared for this. If I'd known you were going to ask me that question, I would have actually.
But that's the thing, isn't it? The question always comes with the position, the decision of need.
Yeah.
Or the best player available, isn't it? And it's.
I think there is. I mean, there always will be. I mean, the ideal player looking for is that Eric Wood type guy.
Yes.
So we drafted him as a guard. He then over and plays center.
Yeah.
That's the kind of one you're really looking for. And guys like that, which will definitely be available, will be, well, he can play mainly guard, but Andrew Voorhees of USC, got Braden Daniels of Utah, who can play pretty much all positions, all five positions, which you can probably get second or third round. But it's those generational, well, I don't like to call them generational, because an offensive guard, you're not really a generational type guy.
No. And that's my point. Who do you, what does a guard that you draft in the first round do that a second or a third can't? Like, it's...
Nine times out of ten, I would say it's the conference he's in. Because you've got Voorhees, who's in the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. You've got Torrance, who's SEC. You've got Icor, who is SEC, but he's ranked a little bit lower, like fourth, fifth round and all that. But it's more about development and in a sense, the school. But, I mean, Cyrus O'Torrence, he is... You're talking about scheme fits, I think. If you think that guard or that center at 27 fits your scheme better and actually fit it better than, say, someone in the fourth round, you'll run to the podium. If you think the other way and you think you can get someone who will fit your scheme well, but you can get him in the third, fourth round, they'll go there. So it's mainly scheme, positions, flexibility, and conference. Those are the three mainly. And say O'Torrence is, in my opinion, the number one rated guard in this league. Eligible
to come. Okay.
But it's just a case of finding that center who can play guard to start with, so you can plan for Morse's retirement when he actually, if he does have another concussion.
Concussion. Yeah, we all hope that he doesn't, but no. you do worry for the guy, don't you? I know I don't.
We've got the draft coming up, draft season coming up, so we'll get guests on and we'll talk about a bit more about what makes.
Yeah, what makes a good center, what makes a good guard, and
also what makes him go in round one or round four, and is there any much of a difference?
And I suppose the strength of it as well, like, because they always talk about, because I've heard this is a really good tight end draft. So you talk about skill positions and are they ever going to get out of 12 personnel? But, you know, are they going to, you know, if you talk about an offensive weapon, is there a decent tight end out there? What's the drop off for the guards or the centres this year. They're decent guards all the way through, or, you know, it's the five goodies, and after that, not so much.
To be honest, there's one, two, three, six or seven, in my opinion, that are good, and they can range from anywhere from round one to round four. So you got John Michael Schmidt of Minnesota, Luke Walpa of Ohio State, who was a wrestler, and can play guard as well as center. Olusegun Oluwatimi. I hope we don't draft him.
we'll all practice it. It's fine.
Of Michigan, Joe Tippman of Wisconsin, Steve Avila of TCU, and Jarrett Patterson of Notre Dame. They are probably the top seven.
Right.
Centers, and the majority of them, with the exception of probably one or two, can play different positions. And guards as well. You're looking at a bit of a drop off after Torrance.
Right.
After Torrance, you've got Voorhees, who is going to be a third round pick, and the rest, unless they have a great combine, Jackson Kirkland, Braden Daniels is the ones looking at. You're going to get round three or four.
Yeah.
And can you actually wait for them to jump straight in? Some of them may be talented enough. They may have gone under the radar because of additional needs other ways. But if I was Brandon and Osiris Torrance was at 27, I wouldn't, and say Jordan Addison or Jackson Smith Ngamba were the options there, I would still pick Torrance all day, because you've got a guy who's plug and play from day one,
mm-hmm.
and can actually get into it straight away and solidifies that spot. And if you want to go after someone in free agency, and this is again the issue, we've only got six picks at the moment in the draft.
Yeah.
Work that cap and we'll have a little bit more money to play with in free agency. So you go for someone like, if you think Torrance is going to be your guy, you start planning to maybe look at Robert Woods, even as much as people have actually dismissed me on that one.
Yeah.
A Robert Woods type guy, a cheap free agent like Paris Campbell. I think GJ Shark could be traded option, but there's some decent wide receivers on there that you can bring in on a year contract and focus on the draft. That's how the Chiefs have got that way. They haven't given out multi-year contracts to skill players. They've mainly tied them up, the multi-years, on the offensive line.
Yeah, so just sort of circling back to the draft then, all being well, every player that you expect to be at 27 is at 27. You go guard in the first round. You go guard in the first round. Obviously, I think we're all agreed, we restructure to get under the cap. Mm. You perhaps trade Ed Oliver for a second and a fifth, let's say, or something around that. You'd probably need to reinvest that in another D lineman. But with the cap, you then pick up a free wide receiver.
Yeah.
You then go guard in the draft, then wide receiver, then another guard.
Then a guard or a safety or even a center that can play play guard. Because, I mean,
so one, two in the draft is guard center. It's two O linemen in the first two rounds.
Yeah, you're looking at least, you should be looking at least two O linemen. I mean, I'm just struggling back, obviously, with, and I'm going to talk about this a lot more during the things with my draft crushes. There's a couple of guys, especially on the defensive line, that I like quite a lot, which I don't think we'll be in play for, but is someone that could make a difference if we do either get rid of Oliver or lose some of those defensive linemen. One is Siaki Ika of Baylor, who is literally 360 pounder, 6 foot three defensive tackle. Right in your run stopper. So even if he's just
26 stone, that's 26 stone. I just had to convert that into.
And if you pay him on run downs, he's not going to be at all. I don't think he's going to be an every down back, Ika. But you stick him with Daquan Jones on run defense or against rush attacks. They're not going to run on us very often because Ika is a very good run stopper who does have a bit of pass rush ability.
Interesting.
But it's a story. It's something to talk about during the off season because we've got safety to look at and there's a fair few good guys here. The combine's on, so we might get someone on afterwards to talk about combine who impressed on that. But the one other thing we need to talk about just before we finish on this is wide receiver, because that is going to have a complete rehaul because you've only got Diggs, Davis and Shakir as your wide receivers under contract at the moment.
Davis is going into year four, isn't he?
Yeah, Davis is going into his
year four. Diggs is under contract. Shakir is only going into year two, so okay.
Yeah,
I think McKenzie's gone.
You've got 2.5 released to McKenzie. Kumaro's gone. Gentry's gone. Beasley will be gone, but there's he wants to come back. Brown's gone. So you're losing a load of keys. But the issue here is. It, Ken Dorsey, and I said we'll talk about his offensive philosophy going forward in other drafts, but they need to find that slot guy that can really use screen passes, because Mahomes, the Chiefs love screen passes. He led the league last year in quarterback rating on screen passes. Yards after the catch, the Chiefs led the league in 2,797 yards after the catch. Bills, they finished 25th with 1,621 yards. Yes, Josh Allen's improving yak was actually a focal point. He was 19th in 2021 with 1,775. But it's something that needs looking at and actually and sorting, because he was going in 2021, he was 8th in screen pass attempts. He was 21st in 2022. Quarterback rating on screen passes decreased from 6th in 2021 to 27th in 2022. How can you lead an offense with a wide receiver and all that when you know you've only got one output and you're not invested in other aspects of the pass game? Because screen pass, as you say, you see what Mahomes has done, whether it be a tight end screen to Kelsey, whether it is that wide receiver screen, whether it's a halfback screen who's actually playing out as a wide receiver. The screen game helps us a lot, and that's something we've never been able to... Well, it seems like we've gone backwards in doing after having a good couple of years using the screen pass.
Yeah, I think it's probably one for free agency. I mean, it's almost a philosophical approach why the Bills don't throw that. Is it a personnel thing? Is it that the O-line wasn't good enough to do it? But I think going back to your first point about slot receiver. Did we mention Jameson Crowder?
Is he out of contract? No, he hasn't. No. No, that's my bad.
It's that. No, it's just fine. It's just we never really saw enough of him to realize it. But the way I would see it going is you maybe sign a free agent wide receiver, because there's usually one or two lying around. and you maybe get one in the draft as well. But you if I think if the right wide receiver is there in the first round, then I think they go get him.
Hmm.
And they maybe get one, an experienced one, another Cole Beasley, if you like, a 29-year-old Cole Beasley. This off season as well. Just bring two in, one in the draft, one in free agency, just to freshen things up.
And before we go, I'll leave everyone pondering this. The Super Bowl this year, obviously, Chiefs versus Eagles. Now, this may shock you and see what type of blueprints each team are going on. On offense, the Chiefs only had five guys they drafted on offense starting that Super Bowl. The Eagles had all bar AJ Brown on their offense.
Hmm.
And on defense, pretty much 9 out of the 11 on the Chiefs defense were draft picks. And only 1, 2, 3, 4 out of 11 of the Eagles were actually draft picks. So you see how important the draft is, mm-hmm. more than free agency. You can pick up guys, so say like the whole wide receiver core for the Chiefs were Juju in 2022. Scatlin in 2022, Tony in 2022. They're free agent guys that they actually signed, whereas, I say, the Eagles have worked over time to actually look with that plan ahead for Jalen Hurts and actually get those players in. So Jalen Hurts was done in 2020. Obviously, they signed Devontae Smith in 2021, Watkins in 2020. So each team has a different philosophy, and yeah, there's no right way to say it. There's not one right philosophy, but you're seeing these teams now, like the Chiefs and to an extent the Eagles and Bengals, going in one way, which is actually fortifying one area, especially in the Chiefs' case, protecting their quarterback. And that's where I think we should be focusing this offseason, is the O-line in the draft. Even if it is just a case they're going to a couple of them will back up, but you're developing them for when that time comes. And that, I think, is really what to leave on.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really have much more to add. I think we've invested enough in the defensive side of the ball. I think this time we need to give Josh Allen the weapons and the protection.
What does Abby think?
She doesn't care about the player so long as her bowl is filled and the lap is available.
She's
got her priorities. She knows what she wants.
So you're half a bowl half full, a bowl half empty type cat.
Well, if you know anything about cats, a half bowl is as good as an empty bowl. They're furious if it's anything less than full. So she's just hiding from Otto at the moment.
So that is an obviously an outlook. Obviously, draft season, free agency is coming up, so we are going to be getting draft guys on to talk. We're going to do our crushes, free agency draft crushes. We'll do our normal series, our YouTube series of Defend the Draft in April, which I'm looking forward to doing some of those. But we will be covering drafts, free agency up until draft, and then we can start planning a lot more into the off season when the fixtures come out and just look forward to what will be an exciting season. Don't forget, keep following us on all socials. So at UK_Bills on Twitter, we'll be dropping more information as we get it regarding events for the London game. And just keep looking. The tickets are available. Ignore the fact that it says the 21st of October. As we said on the previous one, that's just a stopgap, just to allow us to get the tickets. They're being snapped up quite quickly, I'm actually, I'm led to be told. So get them quick. Keep following us, because, as I say, we've got the boat tour, we've got the bus party. We are looking to put on a an evening with meet and greet, hopefully get some ex-Bills players along. That's a work in motion. And a couple other things, which we will release in due time. So keep following us on all the socials. Keep following Robin and myself and Mark on the socials. And from the two of us, it's good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening. And let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Anything about heart? You know anything about work?
No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.